things come. I don't know. Okay, so we're continuing our discussion here about Manishtana. So we're continuing a little bit with the discussion of Manishtana, and what we've seen is that it's the question that we were trying to figure out is this a formal recitation or is this something more informal, something that has to do with the children asking questions, something that emerges out of the child's experience of the Seder. And what we saw last week were proofs in both directions. So on the one hand, we saw that the Gemara says that if you don't have a son, then you're supposed to have your wife ask you. If your wife doesn't ask you, then you have two Talmidei Chachamim sitting together. They have to ask each other. If you're alone, you have to recite the Manishtana to yourself, which would seem to indicate very strongly that this is a formal requirement. On the other hand, we saw a story in the Gemara of Rabba and Abaye, where Abaye was a little child, and he saw that they took the table away, from in front of Rabba before they started eating, and he said, why did you do that? Why did they take the table away? We didn't eat yet. And Abaye and Rabba said, oh, Patartan Milomar Manishtana, you have totally absolved our requirement of saying Manishtana. Now we can start immediately with the Maggid. So the Gemara seems to point in both directions, and we pointed out last time that Tosfot clearly very strongly seems to hold this as a formal text. Even in the story of Abaye, Tosfot said that Abaye said, why did you take away the table? But obviously, he then also said all of the four questions, even though the Gemara doesn't say anything about it. Because you can't get away with just saying some sort of question. You have to say particularly these four questions. On the other hand, we saw that the Rashbam, and we'll see a little bit today, other possible sources seem to indicate that this has to do, the reason why these questions are recited at this point in the Seder, when they pour the second cup of wine, is because that's the point when the child is going to start getting curious. I've seen you do Kiddush before, that we know. That you pour a cup of wine and say Kiddush. Sometimes you'll pour a cup of wine and drink it before the meal. But to have a second cup of wine before we start eating is totally abnormal. And that's what's going to stimulate questions coming from the child, which seems to indicate that this is something based on the child. Another indication that that's true comes out of the Talmud Yerushalmi, which I mentioned last week. I brought you the text this week because it's interesting. Which is that the Talmud Yerushalmi also has our Mishnah. You know, you pour the second cup, v'kan haben shoel, and you say Manishtana. And the Yerushalmi quotes, which is something which we don't see in the Bavli, but the Yerushalmi quotes the language that we have in the Haggadah about the four sons, the four different sons. Tani, so this is the first source here on this sheet. Did I give you the sheet?
Yeah.
Here, so in case I didn't, here's one. The first source on this sheet, Tni Rebchia Keneged Arba Banim Dibra Torah, Ben Chacham Ben Rasha Ben Tipesh Ben Sheino Yudei Lishol. Ben Chacham Ma Omer Ma Avdut Vachukim Mishpatim Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Otanu. So the Chacham asks, what are these laws that God has commanded us? So you're supposed to tell him, Bechozik Yad Hotzianu Hashem Mitzrayim Mibeit Avadim. Great. The Ben Rasha says, Ma avoda zot lachem, what is this avoda to you? Ma torech hazeh she'atem matrichin aleinu b'chol shana v'shana. That's an addition that we don't have in the Haggadah, which is an explanation of the question, right? Then the Haggadah just says, what is this avoda to you? And therefore you have to blunt his teeth. Here the Yerushalmi elaborates. He says, the Rasha is asking, why are you constantly bothering us with this whole Seder every year? It's boring and I don't like it. Mikevan shehotziyat atzmo min haklal, afata amor lo ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li asa lo toha ish lo asa. So he said, you're supposed to say, this is what God did for me. He did it for me. He would not have done it for him. Our God also says you're supposed to be hakei et shinav, to blunt his teeth, which I just saw, some people have suggested. I just saw this today in a different context. But in Yirmiyahu, there's a language like that in Yirmiyahu. Part of the nevuah of the future in Yirmiyahu is that you won't say the father eats the sour grapes and the child has his teeth get blunted, right? rather, the person that eats the sour grapes will himself be blunted. It seems to be, perhaps, I've seen it suggested, that that's what the Haggadah means. That you're telling him, you have this perspective, let me tell you what the consequence of your perspective is. He doesn't understand what the consequence of his outlook is, and you have to explain to him, if you would have been there, you wouldn't have been saved because of the way that you're thinking. Any event, so that's the response you give to the Ben HaRasha. Tipesh ma omer, what does the tipesh say? Mazot. And interestingly, now he's a tipesh instead of a tam. Right in the Haggadah, he's a tam. He's the simple one. And here he's the tipesh. He's the one who doesn't know as much. I mean, he's not, whatever. You can translate that a little bit more derogatory way if you wanted. Mazot, what is this? Af atalimdo hilchot ha-pesach. Shein maftirin achar pesach avikoma. We also switched around the answers. Right, because that is really supposed to be the answer for the Chacham in the way that we have it in the Haggadah. Fine. Shaloya omeid michabura zu v'nichnas l'chabura cheret. Why do you teach him this halacha, ein maftir nachar pesach afikoman, so that he doesn't leave his this group and go to a different group for the Korban Pesach? You have to stick with the Korban Pesach that you were associated with. You can't leave, and you're not allowed to eat in two different groups, so you want to make sure he doesn't leave, because he's liable to, so you have to teach him. Ben she'eno yodei lishol, ad petach lo tchila amar Rabbi Yosa matnita amraken im ein dat beben aviv milamdo. So this was the key that I wanted here. If you have a son who doesn't know how to ask, you have to start the discussion for him. And the Yerushalmi says, and this is what the Mishnah means, our Mishnah that we saw, which says that im ein dat beben aviv milamdo manishtana. That if the child doesn't know what to say, the father teaches him manishtana. The simplest interpretation here is that Yerushalmi is saying, you don't need these questions. You don't need the manishtana questions. If your son asks you questions, you have to answer based on whatever he asks you. If he has no questions, we created filler questions. The Mishnah says, we made filler questions for you. Teach him these questions, and then he will ask them. This also seems to be a strong indication. We mentioned last time, it's just interesting also to see the differences from the Haggadah. But this also seems to be an indication that this is not a formal text. It's a formal text which stands in case you have nothing else to say. But if you have something else to say, then you're supposed to answer it that way. We'll come back to what exactly this means at the end, hopefully. That's the plan. Okay, so that's what we saw last time. You have this split. The question that I wanted to deal with today was the halacha. What exactly do we do? How does this emerge? And I think, at face value at least, there seems to be a machloket rishonim. Machloket rishonim about how exactly we're supposed to look at this. Is this a formal text or not? We'll see that by the time it's done in the Shulchan Aruch, there is no machlokas rishonim. But I think at least, this is what it seems to me, that there seems to be one. You'll see what I mean. So the Maharil, which is the second source on this sheet, cites, he's the only one, seemingly, not the only one, I'm sure, but the only one that I found in terms of looking at these things, who cites this story that we saw in the Gemara, that when Abaye asked, hey, why are you moving the table away? That was the end, and they were putter, and they didn't have to say manishtana afterwards, and everything was fine. Again, we saw the Tosfot says that's not true, but the plain reading of the story is that way. The Maharil says, this is in the Seder Haggadah, the Minhagim of the Maharil, which recounts all of his views on the Haggadah. Kos Sheini Mosgin Bebal Omar Manishtana Va'amar Mahari Segol Kedei Sheyishalu HaTinokot Ma Mosgin Od Lishtot Kulehai V'lo Ochlin Midi. So you pour the cup, and then this is supposed to be the introduction to saying manishtana. Why? Because, and the Maharil Segel explains the same way. The Maharil explains the same way as we saw in the Rashbam, that you pour the second cup stimulates the curiosity of the child. Why are we pouring a second cup of wine before we started to eat? So he'll ask why. V'im shoel ein sarich lomar manishtana v'yatchil avadim hayinu im yirtze. If that works. If the kid asks, hey, what are you doing? Why are we drinking two cups of wine? This is not normal. He's maybe, it works once, right? Does it really work the second year? I don't know. But it works at least one time. They don't know what's going on. So if the child asks that way, you don't have to say manishtana. You simply start going into the Seder. In other words, he seems to hold lemaisa, what we saw in the Gemara, that if the child's curiosity is piqued, then we're done. We finished everything that we need to do. That's one side. As we'll see, once this is quoted by the Rama at the end of the story, he does not read this way, and this gets turned into not this, but it seems to be black on white. I don't know how much more explicit it can be. Ve'im shoel ein sarich lomar manishtana ve'yadchil avadim hayinu. Im yirtze seems to be as explicit as possible that you're all good. Once he asks you a question, you're done. The Rambam's view becomes a big, I don't want to say it's a mess, but it's not very unclear what's going on, and it seems to inform, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't use the language of the Rambam, but it seems to inform the sort of structure that we actually have in the end in the Shulchan Aruch. So we can start to look at the Rambam. The Rambam says, it's good to look at anyway, just in terms of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. He first says there's a mitzvah, we'll see, of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. Then he'll say there's a mitzvah to tell your children about Yetziat Mitzrayim, even if they don't ask you about it. And then he's going to say, and there's an important requirement to stimulate your children to ask you questions. That's where he gets involved in Manishtana. So that's the first thing he says here in mitzvah in Halacha Aleph. Mitzvat asei shel Torah l'saper benisim v'niflaot shena'asu la'avotenu b'mitzrayim b'leil chamisha asar b'nisan shene'amar zachorat hayom hazeh asher yatzatem imi mitzrayim k'mo shene'amar zachorat yom ha'shabbat. So you have a mitzvat asei to talk about on the 15th, the night of the 15th day of Nisan, to talk about Yitziat Mitzrayim, and he makes a comparison here to Shabbos, which is very cryptic and not so clear, and there's been a lot of discussion about what exactly that's supposed to be. That's not for us now, but that's his correlation. Uminayin shebeleil chamishasar. How do you know it has to be on the 15th? Shin the Talmud Lomar v'higadet alevincha b'yom hahu lemor ba'avur zeh. You're supposed to tell your son on that day because of this. Because of what? What is it because of? Ba'avur, or b'shash, yesh matzah u'maror munachim lefanecha. At the time when you have matzah and maror in front of you, that's when you're supposed to recite this story, do this act of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. We see already the higadat lebincha component, the telling the children, is mixed right into the basic description of this mitzvah. You have a mitzvah to talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim. Mixed in is talking to the children. When does this happen? When you have matzah umar, he doesn't say Pesach. There's three different views here at least. The pasuk appears in the context of the description of matzah. You had matzah. I mean, the Korban Pesach discussed there also. But the matzah didn't have time. Your dough didn't have time to rise when you left Mitzrayim, and therefore you have to do this avoda on this night, and you should say ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li. So the Ibn Ezra there assumes it's talking about matzah. Ba'avur, the matzah that's in front of you, because that's what the Torah was just talking about. Rashi quotes Pesach matzah umaror. That's what's in front of you. I think that's what the Gemara says also. I'm not sure, and if I'm not mistaken, and the Rambam just has matzah umaror. Can do with that what you will, but afal pi she'ein lo ben afilu chachamim gedolim chayavim l'saper b'yitziat Mitzrayim. Lest you think that the pasuk is telling you that you're supposed to do this only if you have children, because it says v'yigadet lebincha, you're supposed to tell your son. No, that's not true. Even if people are chachamim gedolim, they know everything. They don't need to be taught anything. They're chayavim l'saper b'yitziat Mitzrayim v'chol hamarich b'dvarim she'iru v'shehayu harei zeh meshubach. Fine. And this is what we also see in the Gada, that anyone who goes into great length and deals with this at length, Hareza Meshubach. We already see here the beginnings of what I want to get at the end, which is that there seems to be an intertwining between a mitzvah of doing Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, which is incumbent on the individual, and a mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, which you have to do with your children. You're supposed to tell your children something. He says, maybe you would think it's only if you have a son. No, you still have to do it yourself. But it sounds like, at a very fundamental level, that's really what this is about. You're supposed to be telling your children about Yetziat Mitzrayim. Okay, that was mitzvah number one. Mitzvah number two, the Rambam says, is to tell your children. We had Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. Mitzvah number two, he emphasizes, to tell your children. Mitzvah lehodia lepanim v'afilu lo shalu. Shene'amar v'higadet lebincha. It's a mitzvah to tell your children about Yetziat Mitzrayim, even if they don't ask you anything. Even if they didn't ask you what's going on, why is this night different, what are we doing, you still have to tell them about Yetziat Mitzrayim. Shene'amar v'higadet lebincha. Lefi da'ato shel ben aviv melamdo. So according to his knowledge, according to the son's knowledge, the father is supposed to teach him. Ketzad im haya katan o tipesh omer lo bni kulanu hayinu avadim kmo shivcha zu o kmo eved zeb mitzrayim ubalayla hazeh pada otanu akadosh baruch hu v'yotzianu lecheru. So if he's a child, if he's not capable of understanding this in great detail, then you tell him in a simple level, we were all slaves, and on this night God freed us from being slaves. If he's a ben, he's a gadol v'chacham, modio ma she'ira lanu b'mitzrayim, v'nisim shenasu lanu al yedei Moshe Rabbeinu akol ufi da'ato shel ben. Fine. So if he's a older child, then you're supposed to tell him everything you should put in as much detail as possible. That's mitzvah number two. So we had mitzvah of sipur, a mitzvah of telling children, and now the Rambam gets into the concept of manishtana. This is the third con. V'tzarich la'asot shinui b'layla hazeh, k'dei she'yiru habanim v'yish'alu v'yomru manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylot. So the children you have to make shinuyim, you have to do things which are weird, which are different, so that the children will ask and they will say manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylot ad she'yashiv lahem v'yomar lahem kach v'kach ira kach v'kach haya, until you can respond to their question and say, oh, this is what happened. What do you do? So you give them candies, and they remove the table, and you steal matzah from each other, which I've never seen, but it's also, I can't imagine how that would work out. It'd just break, right? I don't know. But you steal the afikomen, you do steal, I guess. Maybe that's what he's talking about. Okay, and similar things. Fine, ein lo, and then you have a very jarring transition. Ein lo ben ishto shoelto. If he has no son, his wife asks. Ein lo isha shoelin zed ze. Manishtana halayla ze. If there's no wife husband group, then people that are there ask each other. Afilu hayukulan chachamim hayelavado shoel leatzmo. Manishtana halayla ze. Okay, fine. Yeah, fine. So that if you are by yourself, you have to ask yourself, as we mentioned before. This is the quotation from the Gemara. The Ravid adds that maybe chotvin matzah doesn't mean that you steal it from each other. It means you're supposed to eat really quickly. Okay, one way or another, you're creating changes so that the children will ask. If you would have just left this to me here, and I would have read this, I would have said the Rambam thinks, and it's not clear that there's any, he doesn't mention the text of Manishtana, he doesn't tell you that you're supposed to read a whole Manishtana, he just says you should stimulate your children and they will ask you Manishtana and that will be enough. And if it's the case that you don't have any children, so then someone's going to ask you maybe in a more formal sense. It sounds like there's no absolute necessity to say Manishtana. That's what that seems straightforwardly to be the case. However, once we move on into the Rambam has this divided into two sections. He has Perek Zayin in Hilchot Chametz Matzah, where he discusses the technical chiyuvim, the abstract, what are the mitzvahs, and then in Perek Chet he discusses what the actual how do you do the Seder. What are you supposed to do? First you do this, then you do that. So first he talks about the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziyah Mitzrayim and the mitzvah to tell your children, etc. And then he explains how you actually do it. So this is this source. I mean, that there's I put in the translations of the first section of the Rambams, and now there's the second section. Matchil umevarech brei pri adama, and you take a vegetable and you dip it and you set, and you know, everybody's there. Fine. Afterwards, you remove the table from in front of the person that's reading the Haggadah. Umozgin kos sheni. V'chan haben shoel. So then you pour the second cup, and the son asks. Ve'omer hakore, ma nishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylot. And then he tells you the whole text. Shebechol halaylot, anu matpilim afil pa mechad, etc. I bolded there the key point. He says, and this is a diuk which is pointed out, that you pour the second cup, the son asks, and then the person reading the Haggadah, not the son, the person reading the Haggadah says, Manishtana. Omer HaKorah, we identified the Korah just before. Right. There's a person called Korah HaHaggadah, he's the leader of the Seder, who says Manishtana according to this Rambam, not the child at all. Actually, the person leading the Seder. So what? How do we put this together if we're going to say this? So there is a Now, this is like a Soloveitchik Brisker kind of background, where the Reb Chaim Soloveitchik asked a question, which was, what exactly is the difference? We have a mitzvah of remembering Egypt, leaving Egypt every single day. We do it every day during the Shema. We recall leaving Egypt. So what exactly is the difference between that recollection of leaving Mitzrayim and the one that we're supposed to do at the Seder? In other words, why aren't you just finished when you read Shema in Shul? You go to Shul, you read the Shema, it's got the last paragraph, we're all set, why do you have to do anything else? They're actually those that say, I think it's the Taz holds that once you're in Shul and you said Shema, you actually are Yotze at the most basic level, Min HaTorah, you're done. You don't have to do it. All the Seder is just add-ons. But if we're going to assume that that's not true, how exactly is there any difference? So one of the differences that Reb Chaim pointed out is that it seems from the Rambam there is a concept of asking questions. Part of the text of the Seder is that you must ask these questions of Ma Nishtana Halayla Zeh Mikol Halelot, and these particular four questions. So it has nothing to do with the children asking questions in that case. It has everything to do with being part of the text of the Seder, right, being part of the structure of the Seder. What about the fact that we're clearly interested in children asking questions, we're clearly interested in changing stuff so that the children will ask questions? What about that? So I saw here the way that Rav Soloveitchik explained this was that there is two halachas. One halacha is called piquing the curiosity of the children. You have to do whatever you can to try and engage them and make them curious and make them wonder what's going on and see what's happening. And to that extent, he notes that like the Beis Halevi used to do all kinds of... The Gemara talks about giving out candies and giving out nuts and moving the table and dipping. The whole concept of karpas is really just, you know, so the children will ask. And people wear a kittel, maybe that's also because the children will ask. And the Beis Halevi used to do all kinds of other, whatever crazy stuff he could do. I don't know if it's crazy, whatever things he could do to make the children confused so that they would start asking questions. That's one chiyuv. You have to do that and try and get them to stimulate them to ask questions. And independently of that, part of the text of the Seder is to say Manishtana. And he pointed out, Reb Soloveitchik pointed out, that this fits very nicely. The Aruch HaShulchan has an explanation where he says Manishtana is not really, you could interpret it as a question, but you could also interpret it as sort of like an exclamation. How different is this night? This night is so different than all the other nights.
How is the Omer Akari, not Shoel Akari, which would seem to support the Aruch HaShulchan, no?
Yeah.
He's a lot of saying a statement.
Right. And actually, if you look carefully before, in the previous parak in Halacha Bat, or Halacha Gimel, where it talks about the children, Kedesha Yiru Abanim V'yishalu V'yomru Manishtana Halay Lazeh. It's the same kind of language. So it's very possible, and this is going to be true however you read these Rambams, that Manishtana is not a question, it's an exclamation. How different is this night than the rest of the nights? So that's how this is put together. That's how Rav Soloveitchik puts it together. There's one requirement to pique the interest of the children, and this is sort of intertwined with the Manishtana because you have to pique their interest. And, you know, it's good if they ask these questions. Someone's got to ask them. It's not a bad thing if you manage to make the children curious so they start asking these things. And then there's a separate requirement of saying this text, and he notes that Reb Chaim Brisker used to say it. You know, the children would ask it, and then he would say it again himself because he felt that that's what you needed to do. That's one view over here. I was wondering if it might not be possible to say something a little bit different. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure about this. I asked, I was actually at my Rebbe's house yesterday in New York. I was in New York for a day, long story. But and I asked him what he thinks about this. And he says, yeah, he's very taken in by this diuk. And he also says that he doesn't understand, the Gemaras are like very cryptic and they're very hard to understand, the things that we've seen before. It's very hard to put all these things together, but I was wondering if you might be able to say the following, just in terms of answering the question at a little bit more philosophical level. Why are we doing this? That's great. You want to say that there's a piquing of the interest of the children, and then you have to also say the text of the Manishtana. You have to mouth these questions or these exclamations. What is going on? So I was thinking, perhaps you could say that as far as the Yerushalmi is concerned, that we just saw, that you have the four sons, and you answer them each according to their question, and only if there are no questions do you even have to resort to this concept of manishtana. There, the explanation is very clear. What is the goal? The goal is education. You're educating your children. You have to educate your children based on their background. When you educate someone, you don't answer that. You don't give them answers which are useful for somebody else that they can't comprehend, which don't relate to their personality, and which don't relate to the questions that they ask you. But the Yerushalmi says, you have children. If they're stimulated, and they ask you about Pesach in a specific way, you have to answer them in a specific way. If the Chacham asks you, what is this about? You have to answer, whatever, however you want to take it. But you have to answer him with Halacha. I mean, that's, you know, the classic. He's going to learn all the dinim, and he'll learn everything, and he'll be, because he's a Chacham. If he's a Rasha, and he's asking you from his philosophical perspective, you need to answer him and say, you wouldn't have been saved. You should understand where your perspective is going to lead you. If he doesn't know much, if he's a Tam or he's a Tipesh, then you have to answer him that way. And if he has nothing, then you do it. That I understand very clearly. There's a role in the Seder of the educator. It's v'higadat l'bincha. The parent is the educator, the child is the student, and this is the relationship which occurs. It's more confusing when we seem to have that concept running up into a formal text, which is, you know, which we're required to recite anyway. And I was wondering if you could say that it seems that the Rambam, based on the first few halachas that we saw here, that the Rambam is spelling things out as follows. There is a basic mitzvah called Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, right? I have to do this. Part of my requirement of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is to show, you know, is to educate my children about what Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is. I'm telling them about it. But more than just information, part of the critical element of the Haggadah, and we'll get back to this a little bit hopefully after this, but part of the critical element of the Haggadah is the experience. By the time we get to the end of the Haggadah, we're going to have to say, everybody is chayav to see themselves as though they just came out of Mitzrayim. And part of the experience, if you're going to have a discussion and it's going to be real, is that you're gripped by the question. What is going on? Why is this night different? What about the evening? There's something special, something important about this night that we're sitting where we're sitting at the table right now, which is different than any other night, and there's something special and important about it. What is that? Let's explore that. And by the time you get to the end of it, that's how you draw out this experience of Yetziat Mitzrayim. That it's not just a, you know, it's not just an intellectual experience, but it's also a deeper emotional experience of Yetziat Mitzrayim, which emerges out of this discussion. So you have to try and trigger in the child, not just that I'm going to tell you information, but that you need to be engaged. You need to wonder and be curious about what's going on. And that's the way that you do Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. So you have to teach the child that, but in addition to teaching the child that, the parent, every person, has to undergo that experience also. Every person has to ask themselves, Manishtana halayla hazeh? Right? You have to know how to do this, how to take the evening and think about the fact that it's different than any other night, and start to delve into the question of what this means and where it comes from and what that experience is about. And not only do you have to do this for yourself, but you also have to teach your child how to do this. And that's how both of these things come together. There's a mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. There's a mitzvah of telling your child. Part of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is the experience of understanding Manishtana. I'm very happy with the assumption that's not a question. It's an explanation. Exclamation. This night is different than any other night, and therefore, you know, we have to think about what that means historically for us and how it affects our lives today, etc. And also, you have to teach your child how to engage with the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim in that way, not just as a piece of dry information, but as something which engages them, which causes them to ask questions, and then you can respond to those questions. And that way, it's a more gripping kind of experience than just a plain intellectual thing. That sort of makes sense? Kind of, sort of. So that's why you have these two. I mean, it's just in terms of answering, even if you want to say this brisker idea that there's a chiyuv to have questions as part of the Seder, but why? Why do I have to? I know the answers to the questions. I already know what's going on. Why do we have to have these questions? So perhaps because the idea of having questions is to be gripped in a serious way by the content, by what's going on. And that's important for the child. It's equally as important for everybody else that's involved in the Seder as well. Okay. And that also means, just by the way, that the text of the questions, this is something that came up before, the text of the questions, is that really important or not? Do we ever answer these questions? Do we not answer them? The original format of the questions deals with Pesach, Matzah, Maror, and dipping. The dipping is the odd one out, right? But Pesach, Matzah, Maror, why do we eat a Korban Pesach? Normally we eat any kind of meat. Tonight it's a Korban Pesach. Normally we eat Chametz and Matzah. Tonight it's just matzah. Normally we eat all kinds of vegetables, now it's maror, and normally we dip, not at all, now we dip twice. Why? So it's dealing with some of the core. You have to assume, I don't want to go into what exactly the explanation is, but you have to assume that we're dealing with some of the core elements. What exactly is gripping me? What is important about the evening that I need to respond to? Okay, and just as a final note, we see lahalacha that this is more or less the idea that comes out in the Shulchan Aruch. Mosgin lo miyad is the last source here. Kos sheni kedesha yishalu hatinokot lama shotim kos sheni kodem suuda. V'im ein chachma beben aviv malamdo. Im ein lo ben ishto shalto v'im lav hu shol et atzmo v'afilu talmidei chachamim sholim zelazem manishtana v'chule. So he assumes, I mean, it's the same kind of language, that it's not exactly the same. It's really from the Torah, not from the Rambam, but that, you know, you're supposed to stimulate questions from the children, but also there's a formal text. Your son, somebody's got to ask, Manishtana. If it's not your son, then it's your wife. If it's not your wife, it's Talmid Chaim Sholim Zelazah. And just to point out that here the Ramah quotes from that Maharil, the Maharil who we said seems to say clearly that once the child asks a question, you can forget about Manishtana Lagamre. He says, Ukusha haben u ha'isha shawalet, ein tzorech lomar manishtana elamadchil avadim. He just says, what the Maharil means is, once somebody asks this question, you don't also all have to ask the question again. Not everybody has to say this question to themselves. It just means you can continue into Avadim Hayinu, which I don't know what happened. It doesn't seem to be what the Maharil said. So I think that it's a little bit confusing. We had multiple indications in the Gemara. Is this a formal text? Is it not a formal text? The Maharil, at least at face value, seems to say it's not formal. The Yerushalmi also says it's not formal. The Rambam puts the two of them together. You have to stimulate the children. They're supposed to be asking. It's supposed to emerge from their experience. But at the same time, there seems to be a formal text component of it as well. The brisker kind of idea is to say that there's two halachas. One is to stimulate the curiosity of the child, because that's important. The other is that this is a formal part of the Haggadah as well. All I added on there, and you can take it or leave it, is that kind of feeling of being gripped by the question is critical if the Seder is supposed to be more than just an intellectual exercise. It's also supposed to be some sort of experiential exercise. So you have to be gripped by the question, because that's part of what Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is. And the reason why you have to get your children to ask questions is because you have to teach them also how to be gripped by the experience, how to be sort of curious and engaged with what's going on. And we see in terms of the Shulchan Aruch that this seems to be the case. You're supposed to try and stimulate the children to ask questions, and on the other hand, there it seems to be a requirement for these questions to be said. The Ramah doesn't say everyone has to say them, but they need to be said in some way or form at the Seder. Okay, that's the first component, right? We originally broke down the Magid into four pieces. The first one was Manishtana. The second one is Matchil Begnut Umasayim B'Shevach. You're supposed to start with the embarrassing parts and end with the less embarrassing parts. So here, the Gemara has an argument. What exactly are the less embarrassing parts? What are the more embarrassing parts? Really, the question is, what is the range? What are we supposed to be including? So this, if we look back in the Gemara, it's on Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph. A machloket between Rav and Shmuel. Yeah. So, Matzchil B'Gnut U'Masayim B'Shevach. My Gnut, Rav Amar, Mitchila Ovde Avodat Gililim, or Avodat Kuchavim, Hayu Avoteinu. Fine. V'Shmuel Amar Avadim Hayinu. That's the end. That's the whole discussion. There's no more information given in the Gemara. We include both of these things. First, we have to flesh out what exactly are the phrases, because they're not really only arguing about where we begin, they're also arguing about where we end. Right? One version says, Rav says, Mitchila ovde avoda kuchavim hayu avotenu. This is reference back to before Avraham. We're talking about Terach. Avi Avram, Avi Nachor, whatever. Terach was way, way, way back, who was an oved avoda kuchavim. That's what we say in the Haggadah. And now Hashem has brought us close to his avoda. V'achshav kirvanu amakom la'avodato. That's the framework that Rav spells out. What does it mean that we're supposed to talk about Gnut and Shevach? We start with Avodat Kochavim Hayu Avoteinu. We end with, now we're in God's service. And Shmuel says, Avadim Hayinu. We were slaves in Egypt, and God took us to Paro in Mitzrayim, and now we're free, God took us out of Mitzrayim. Those are the two possible scopes. So those two things, there's not a lot to say about this. There's two possible ranges there in terms of what, you know, two possible explanations in terms of what is this supposed to mean. I don't know if this is the classic view, but one possibility is to say this is an argument about, it's clearly an argument of emphasis. What are we supposed to be emphasizing during the Seder when we say things? The one possibility is you're supposed to emphasize the spiritual component. Originally, we were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and now we're not Ovdei Avodah Zarah anymore. Now we serve God. That's a spiritual Yeshua. The other possibility is, and then the other side is talking about the physical redemption. We were physically slaves to Paro in Egypt, and now we've been taken out, and we're not physically, we don't have to serve Paro anymore. That's one possibility. What my Rebbe pointed out is that you could look at it in a different way. It's not a question of physical versus spiritual, but it's a question of scope. What are we looking at? When we talk about Mitzrayim, when we talk about leaving Egypt, what exactly are we commemorating? Are we just commemorating actually leaving Egypt? We were slaves in Egypt, and now we're not slaves in Egypt. That's what the holiday is about. That's what it is. And he asked, you know, you could sort of say, someone maybe, if you were going to look at it from this perspective, and you were being a religious person, you would say, well, that's not fair. Like, you know, why are we thanking God for taking us out of Egypt? He put us into Egypt in the first place. That's the only reason we were there. He sent us down there. He didn't have to send us down there. So what? How does, you know, it's like somebody pushes, his example is somebody pushes you into the water and you're drowning, and he says, oh, I'm going to save you, and he pulls you out of the water, and now you're safe. So, shkoyach. That's not really critical. So that's a more narrow scope. The broader scope, which is being presented by Rav, is that we're not celebrating just leaving Mitzrayim, we're celebrating the entire scope of Jewish history. In other words, this we're looking at the moment of Yetziat Mitzrayim within the broader scope of all of Jewish history, and maybe even all of human history. There is an era of Terach where everybody was worshiping Avodah Zarah, they were all worshiping idols, and you know, then there was Avraham, and now God has turned us into this nation who is going to, you know, we're going to reverse that whole Terach world. The world of Terach, where everyone worshipped Avodah Zarah, is going to end through the Jewish people, who are going to become an Or L'Goyim and change the world and make it into a place where everyone recognizes God again. So in that broader scope, we're not just looking at being saved from Egypt, but we're looking at the broader implications of being saved from Egypt. It's not just the guy who pushed you into the pool and then pulled you out of the pool. It's the guy who pushed you in the pool so you learned how to swim. And then, you know, maybe you pulled yourself out of the pool, he pulled you out of the pool afterwards. Whatever, but the goal, the point was, you're looking at the story of Egypt from the perspective of history, which means you understand that it had a purpose. And this is, I mean, it fits nicely into the way that other people talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim. The Maharal had a whole description where he said that this was the birthing point. This was the birth of Bnei Yisrael as an eternal nation, as a nation who's going to who's going to be part of history forever. This is the point at which this whole idea started. So both of these things are incorporated into the Haggadah. I think that's a very, very interesting way of looking at it. It's not just spiritual versus physical. It's minimal scope versus extremely broad scope. And the truth is, we're really celebrating both things. At one level, we're celebrating the fact that we were saved physically. At another level, we're celebrating the fact that this event of Yetziyat Mitzrayim is part of the huge historical event which pulled us out of Avodah Zarah from the Terach world before Avraham, and which ultimately is going to pull everybody out of Avodah Zarah, which is going to lead into a future kind of redemption. Okay, that's Matchil B'Gnut U'Masayim B'Shavach. And then we continue a little bit into the next Mishnah. Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer. So we talked about this story about the slave. Right, we looked at it the first time. We looked at it. Rav Nachman Amar le Rav Nachman le Daru Avde Avda de Mapik le Mare le Cherut v'Yayiv le Kaspa v'Daba Mai Bai le Meimar. If you have a slave whose master took him out and gave him gold and silver, he should thank him. He should praise him. And then somehow, for some reason, Rav Nachman said, "Oh, now we don't have to say Manishtana." And I totally ignored explaining this in any context that we discussed about Manishtana, because I had no idea what to do with it. And I was very happy yesterday when my Rebbe also said, "We don't know what that means. What does that mean? It has nothing to do with Manishtana. It's totally cryptic." Yeah, it is reminiscent, but in the earlier case, I understand very clearly. There's a child, he asked the question, so now he doesn't have to ask the rest of the questions. Great. The slave, didn't ask the question. The slave owner asked the question. The slave answered the question. And he didn't express any curiosity about what was happening at the Seder. So it's very unclear how you're supposed to interpret that in any kind of context. What does that have to do with any kind of Manishtana? There's no curiosity expressed by the slave. Not 100% clear. We noted before that the Rashbam takes out the words Patartan Milomar Manishtana totally, and so it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with Avadim Hayinu and something else. Okay, that's what we have there. Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer Kol Shelo Amar Shlosha Dvarim Elu BePesach Lo Yatzei Yedei Chovato VeEluhen Pesach Matzah Umaror. Okay, so now Rabban Gamliel adds, this is the fourth component. We talked about Manishtana, we talked about Matchil B'Gnut U'Masayim B'Shavach. In the middle, we have the concept of which was mentioned in Lash Mishnah, it's not talked about in the Gemara at all, is that you have to be Doresh, the story of Arami Oved Avi. And now, Rabban Gamliel says, you're not Yotzei Yedei Chobato until you talk about Pesach Matzah Umar. Right, and he explains what all these things mean. This is what we see in the Haggadah. Pesach al shum shepasach amakom abatei avoteinu b'mitzrayim shenemar v'amartem zevach pesach hu la'Hashem asher pasach v'gomer matzah al shum shenigalu avoteinu b'mitzrayim shenemar v'yafu atabatzek asher otziu b'mitzrayim and maror al shum shemaruru ha'mitzrim et chayei avoteinu b'mitzrayim shenemar v'maru at chayeihem. So fine, Pesach is because of the passing over. Matzah is because they didn't have time to bake matzah, which was not chametz, which was chametz rather, and mar because of the bitterness. And then we have the final piece here. Bechol dor v'dor, chayev adam lirot et atzmo ki ilu hu yatza mitzrayim. Shneamar v'higadet to labincha b'yom hu leimor ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeiti mitzrayim. Lefikach anachnu chayavim lehodot lehalal lishabeach lefeir leramem leverech lelel lekaleis lemisha asal avotenu lano et kolanisim ha'elu. And he took us out from slavery to freedom, lesimcha miyagon lesimcha miyavel liyom tov, etc. And we start moving into Hallel. So, I mean, we have a couple minutes, but just about a note about the progression here, which was also made by Rav Salvatrix, probably made by many other people also, is that we have these four components. The Manishtana is a question, then we have the Matchil B'Gnut U'Masayim B'Shavach, the Darshaning of Arami Oved Avi, and the three components here of Pesach Matzah Maror, and then we have a requirement of Tzarech Lirot Et Atzmo Ki Ilu Hu Yatzah Mitzrayim. A person has to see themselves as though they themselves came out of Shibud Mitzrayim. So what Rav Salvechik points out is you have a progression. A progression which moves from a very intellectual practice of trying to figure out, understand the halachas of Pesach, of learning Torah, to the end where you see here that this is a very emotional kind of experience. You're supposed to feel as though you yourself just came out of Mitzrayim. And he notes in this context, the chunk that we skipped about Arami Ovid Avi, that the section of Arami Ovid Avi, if you had to pick a part of the Torah to use which describes the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, what would you pick?
Shmot.
I mean, there's a whole part of the Torah where it tells you exactly what happened in Yetziat Mitzrayim in detail. Arami Ovid Avi is not from Shmot, right? Arami Ovid Avi is from Parshat Ki Tavo. What is it? It's the story of Mikra Bikurim. Somebody comes with their first fruits on their tree, from their tree, random person, hundreds of years after Egypt happened. They're living in Israel. They got the first fruits. They come to the Kohen and they have to say a formula. And the formula is Arami Ovid Avi. My father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down to whatever exactly when I translate that. And he went down to Mitzrayim, and then they became a nation, and we were subjugated, and then we were taken out of, God took us out of Mitzrayim, and brought us to the land, and gave us the land, and we inherited it, and then I farmed it, and then my fruit, I had a tree, and the tree grew, and then it gave fruit, and here's the first fruit of my tree. What is that about? That is about putting the entire history of, basically, of Jews as a nation into a context where this person is standing there with his fruit and he thinks about the entire scope of Jewish history that led to this moment when he's sitting here with his fruit in his hand and he's totally part of this huge progression of history, and that's what allowed, and then he's giving thanks to God. Thank you for, you know, the whole story and taking us out and bringing us here and giving me my land and giving me my tree and giving me my pear or whatever first fruit it happens to be. So Rav Soloveitchik points out is the point of Arami Ovid Avi is part of this transfer. We're moving from an intellectual talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim into a very emotional experience that I'm part of this story, that this is, I was taken out now. Those events that happened a long time ago have direct impact and relevance to me right now. And therefore we pick the Parsha of Arami Ovid Avi because that Parsha, that's what it's about. It's about taking the entire history of Judaism, of the Jewish people, and attaching it into what I'm experiencing right now. So that's an important point about this transfer, that you start with Manishtana. I think the way that we looked at Manishtana, it may also be part of this story. You're feeling gripped by there's something about the evening, there's something about the night which is different, we have to investigate it, we have to discover, and as you move through the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, you understand that this story had personal bearing on you, it had personal impact on you. My life would not be the same. The life of the Jews would not be the same without this event of Yetziat Mitzrayim. It plays through this notion of Matchil B'Gnut U'Masayim B'Shevach as well. If you're looking at things from the broader scope of the history of the world, or even if maybe if you're looking at them from the smaller scope, but certainly if you're looking at them from the broader scope of the whole Jewish history, of the history of the world as a whole, then you understand that this is also relevant to me right now. I'm part of some sort of progression, and you come to the understanding that this is a critical moment in my life right now. I feel like right now this has impact on me. So that's a little bit about. It was a little bit more drushy than usual, but I think given the ideas of the Haggadah, maybe that's important. Any event, okay. So that's
Another explanation I've heard for that is that the reason it went to Tavo and not to Shmot is because the essence of the Karas of Tavo. So if you look at it that way, what is Bikurim? Bikurim is the Karas of Tavo, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to build, you can deal with the Kohen, and that's when you make the whole declaration.
Right.
And it's Mitzrayim is the Karas of Tavo. So you can look at it, so it's Mitzrayim, the same light, that's why it's picked from Tavo and not.
Right, yeah, I don't think that's a...
It's similar.
It's, yeah, I think those go together. I just think the point that's being drawn out is, right, when you have a Karas of Tavo, it's because you understand that something is relevant to your life, right? So if we want to talk about Mitzrayim, like once there was Yetziat Mitzrayim and it happened, you can quote Shmot and talk about the story. If you want to talk about how this is part of it, you're right. I mean, the point is that you erupt into Hallel and stuff by the time you're finished doing Magid. That's where you go. It's supposed to be a natural flow. Right, so that's some thoughts about the structure of the Haggadah, a little bit about Manishtana and Matka B'Nut Masayim Shavach.
It's like that old joke. Explain our Jewish.